Morant with a running start. Elevates. Ooh. Oh, it dunks. Oh, my goodness. Jalen. Tie game in overtime. Gasol will turn his heat. It's good. It's all time. 17. Conley now with three. Count it. A 15-point play for Memphis. And Blake Griffin gets into it on the floor with Randolph. Hard to tell if there are any punches being thrown under there, but Griffin took exception to something. The officials break it up quickly.
See, he just locked his arm and then kind of pulled him over. Zach falls down, and then, you know what? A little elbow there.
Oh, he's digging the elbow.
Yeah, you know.
Welcome to Grits and Grinds, a Memphis Grizzlies podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. My name is Keith Parrish. The Grizzlies defeat the Toronto Raptors to close up a kind of rough road trip to hopefully reverse their fortunes. They have not looked good in a very long time. I mean, technically, you come home with a 2-1 record on this road trip where you defeated the Timberwolves, you lost to the Pistons in a painful defeat, and then you beat the Raptors. I mean, yes, all three of those teams are kind of tanking. They are all, you know, freely playing younger players, resting some guys. So you wish you could have won all three of those games. But I guess you can be happy with a 2-1 record. When you throw in the loss to the Magic last week, then it gets extremely kind of upsetting and frustrating as a Grizzlies fan, as the team continues to just stumble a bit going down the stretch. On the one hand, you know, you could argue, hey, 2-1 on this road trip, that's all right. And then on the other hand, you say, well, they lost to a Magic team last week that only had 9 healthy players available. And then you lose to a Pistons team that also only had 9 healthy bodies available. And having that happen in the same week, that's it. That is inexcusable. I was arguing that the Pistons loss isn't as terrible as it looks on the surface, and I do believe that. It was the second night of a back-to-back. The Grizzlies caught a tiny unlucky break that the Pistons decided to let Corey Joseph play, because Corey Joseph hadn't played a while, and Corey Joseph is a, you know, he's a long-time professional. He's a solid rotation player in the NBA, and he took it to Ja Morant. He, like, took this game seriously. Like, I'm going to get 30 minutes, and I'm going to play hard, and I'm going to do a good job. And also Wayne Ellington. Wayne Ellington, who I mentioned on the episode with Steve Jones, if you listen to that, Steve was bemoaning the fact that the Grizzlies back in the day traded away Wayne Ellington. Well, Wayne Ellington drops 6 three-pointers off the bench and helps the Pistons defeat the Grizzlies. Like I'm saying, putting Corey Joseph and Wayne Ellington back into the Pistons rotation and taking Killian Hayes and Josh Jackson out of the rotation was an unlucky break for the Grizzlies, because those are big improvements. Because of this substitution of Joseph and Ellington into the rotation, then, like, they actually had a little nice thing going on. They played 9 players. They started 2 rookies, but, like, those guys are decent. Those guys are pretty good. Sadiq Bey and Isaiah Stewart, they're having nice rookie seasons. Isaiah Stewart, I mean, he had a great game. He's probably the best big from this year's draft class, just based on this season, if you ignore kind of future potential. I mean, Xavier Tillman's probably been the second best big man in this year's draft class, just based on this year's performance, but Isaiah Stewart has definitely been ahead of him. So, like, while you're upset, and I think it's very legitimate to be upset at the Grizzlies' loss, you know, that's one of those things where if you have enough decent, okay players, rotation players, that you can get upset. And we've seen it before many times in the NBA. If you're playing on the second night of a back-to-back and your opponent has guys who are itching to play and young guys who are pretty good. Like, Pistons fans are also, you know, they're a little upset they won the game, some of them, because they're trying to tank. But, I mean, they played a tank-heavy lineup. They were playing the young guys. They were just playing the better young guys. Killian Hayes is not really helpful towards winning. I mean, Josh Jackson isn't that young, but he doesn't really make other players better. Frank Jackson, who was playing, who you might not even know who he was, as he was kind of hurting the Grizzlies. Frank Jackson's been having a nice little run here, kind of as the Pistons season goes into full tank mode, but he, like, makes his teammates better, and he can score effectively. So the Grizzlies, you know, get tripped up. And as much as I, you know, can compliment kind of what the Pistons did, it's still a terrible loss. And the Grizzlies just could not get it together. I mean, Dylan Brooks was kind of real bad. He, in the last few games, it seems like his decision-making has really devolved again. And again, it's a roller coaster. Man, Dylan had maybe this longest stretch ever of really good basketball play, but against the Pistons, not very good. Wasn't that effective against the Timberwolves. Had some nice moments against the Raptors, but actually, he kind of fell apart at the end of the game and made some bad decisions in the last 2 minutes. I'll get to that in a little bit. But the overarching theme, I mean, of this awful Pistons loss and even pulling out the win over the Raptors, is just the Grizzlies are struggling to show any consistency. And there are so many things we've like highlighted what we think could be wrong. I mean, we were making Justice Winslow the scapegoat for a while, and I was bringing into question some of Taylor Jenkins' decisions. The most obvious answer for why the Grizzlies haven't looked consistently good in such a long stretch, it is just the schedule. And it's that they're playing more games than anyone. And yes, they did shuffle up the rotation to try to add pieces back into it. You have Jaren Jackson Jr. They needed to get back into the rotation. And there were hiccups along the way. When they lost to the Pistons, that was the fifth straight defeat where Jaren Jackson Jr. played. All their wins had been when he was not playing. And so that dropped them to 1-6 on the season when Jaren Jackson Jr. played. If you remember last year, you might not remember, but after the All-Star break, the Grizzlies actually were 0-5 with Jaren Jackson Jr. So after that Pistons game, I was looking it up and I was like, oh man, the Grizzlies have won one game with Jaren Jackson Jr. in the past 448 days since February 12th, 2020. The Grizzlies had gone 1-11 in Jaren Jackson Jr. games. They got the win against Toronto. Hey, now they're 2-11 in the last 13 games that Jaren Jackson Jr. has played. I'm not saying that to blame Jaren Jackson Jr. I mean, in the bubble, Jaren Jackson Jr. was awesome. But they have been losing when Jaren played, and getting him back up to speed was not going well. And you can combine the elements of maybe they're feeling the pressure. Maybe they're going through a little bit of a shooting slump. But also, it's the schedule. When the schedule was released, we circled all these things and we were like, whoa, the Grizzlies play 17 of 25 games on the road? Or whoa, the Grizzlies are playing, I can't remember what it is. Was it 45 games in 68 days or 40 games in 68 days? It was more games in fewer days than has basically ever been done in the NBA. Not since like the very early days of playing four straight nights in Philadelphia when you were the Knicks. And if you look at the Spurs, who are in the same predicament, never having 2 days off. It's either you have 1 day off and you play a game, or 1 day off then you play two games. The Spurs are also falling apart, and they're falling apart much worse than the Grizzlies are. It's probably because their schedule is much harder. The Spurs have lost 6 of 7, and like the Grizzlies, they have 5 more games in the next 7 days of the season. So the obvious answer is this team is showing fatigue. Even though they've tried to keep the minutes low, even though some guys have been in and out of the rotation, and you know, you'd hope Jaren Jackson Jr. would be fresh. And honestly, Ja Morant has looked fine. His defense is lacking, but he's still providing this energy. But when you see these mental mistakes, maybe that is just the fatigue. When you see Dylan Brooks falling back into bad habits of shot selection, maybe it's just overall general fatigue. I was highlighting D'Anthony Melton, who I was worried that we were kind of losing him. Just based on body language and the minutes he was playing and his performances, that we were kind of losing his energy. Maybe he was checking out mentally because the Knicks game was so bad and he only played 9 minutes, but he got yanked. He had a couple bad turnovers in the first half. Didn't seem very active out there. Played 2 minutes in the second half, had another bad turnover. Didn't play anymore. And then in the Timberwolves game and in the Pistons game, just wasn't seeing a ton from him. And these are games where Grayson Allen's not available. Like in the Pistons loss, Melton played 14 minutes. That's a game without Grayson Allen. And it's not like he was setting the world on fire when he was out there. You guys know that I'm obsessed with D'Anthony Melton and think he should play 30 minutes a night. But there was a stretch of games where I was like, wow, man, maybe Melton's like, you know what? I'm kind of mentally checked out because I haven't been getting the play in time because I don't understand why these guys are ahead of me. So I was worried about it. You guys know what happened. D'Anthony Melton came through in a huge way against the Toronto Raptors. I mean, an absolutely gleeful moment for me and for Grizzlies fans, where this team that had been struggling, where the Grizzlies hadn't looked right in a couple of weeks, honestly. And Melton, in the fourth quarter, knocks down 5 3-pointers and helps pull the game out. He became just the third Grizzlies player in Grizzlies franchise history to knock down at least 5 3-pointers in a fourth quarter. The other two are Troy Daniels, who did it in a massive blowout over the Thunder, and Mike Miller, who did it in a narrow defeat against the Dallas Mavericks way back in the day. But D'Anthony Melton showed up again, provided that spark. I mean, big picture, I'm saying the Grizzlies are struggling. Also big picture, or maybe just slightly smaller picture, if I'm looking at this Raptors game, I'm saying, hey, Jaren Jackson Jr. started. Awesome. That's what I wanted. Hey, they closed with D'Anthony Melton. Awesome. That's what I wanted. We got the win. But Melton goes off. I mean, again, he had no points entering the fourth quarter, finishes with 15 on those 5 made 3-pointers. Now for the season, listen to this. There are 139 players who have attempted at least 50 fourth quarter 3-pointers. So we're looking at fourth quarter shooting. Fourth quarter 3-point shooting. 139 players have attempted at least 50 fourth quarter 3-pointers. D'Anthony Melton is first in 3-point percentage. He's 54.5% on fourth quarter 3-pointers. We tracked this before, where Grayson Allen was amazing in first quarters of 3-pointers, was kind of bad in second halves. D'Anthony Melton had been bad in first halves, really good in second halves, and amazing in fourth quarters. And it continued. Him erupting with the 5 made fourth quarter 3-pointers. What does that mean going forward? Are we going to see a more engaged Melton again? I mean, he also was a couple of whistles away from having a fantastic game. He had a turnover that was absolutely a blown foul call where Gary Trent Jr. grabbed his arm. He also had a couple of moments where he was very close to getting steals and blocks, but was called for a foul where you could have seen maybe those calls going the other way. But I hope we see him re-engaged. I hope this whole team maybe can find their footing again, because I've been confused in these last couple of games. I mean, I understand on the one hand that they're struggling because of fatigue, possibly, but I've been really encouraged by the rotations and the rotation decisions, and I feel like there's just some kind of bad rut that they need to break out of, because like these second units should be crushing teams. They're running lineups out there that I think should be really dominant. You're getting Ja and Bane and Melton with Jaren Jackson Jr. and Brandon Clark. That should be awesome. And it just hasn't yet. They haven't had a continued run. They haven't really locked in like I think we're expecting to see. Right now, all their successes when they come, it's like smaller little runs. It's a little bit slower. They're not scoring as much as they had been when they were really clicking. And let's be frank, their opponents have been bad. I mean, the Raptors were without Pascal Siakam at the end of the game. They were resting OG Anunoby. They were resting Kyle Lowry. They were resting Fan VanVleet. You're not playing a good team. I don't like how close it was. I don't like how close the Timberwolves win was. And if they hadn't been rescued with this 3-point shooting, you could have had another just disastrous loss. I mean, this team almost gave the game away. Let's go over the last 2 minutes where they almost gave the game away. Or they at least opened the door for the Raptors to do that. They were up 10 with 2 minutes and 10 seconds left. And Ja Morant dribbles the ball off his foot, going behind his back with very minimal pressure. He was guarded by Malachi Flynn. Just dribbles the ball out of bounds or off his foot. That's a turnover. Then Yuta Watanabe comes out and makes a 3-pointer. All right, now it's a 7-point game. So you're up 7, minute 40 left. Dylan Brooks, he goes into a pretty tough one-on-one move and shoots this floater going out of bounds. There's still 7 seconds left on the shot clock. 7 seconds on a shot clock is a lot, where you can still have a couple more, you know, attacking activities. You can pass it to someone else. So Dylan Brooks shoots this bad shot with 7 seconds left on the shot clock. Jonas Valanciunas keeps it alive after it misses, and Dylan ends up with the offensive rebound. Dylan does not dribble the ball out to run off the 14 seconds or to run something else. He goes back up in traffic, misses a layup. Just there's no awareness of the clock and the game situation. Earlier in this fourth quarter, when D'Anthony Melton had just made 4 consecutive three-pointers, Dylan gets the ball in the corner, slightly guarded. Melton's wide open on the wing. Just swing, swing, get it to him. He's wide open. And Dylan shoots that shot. He apologizes. You can see they go to timeout. He apologizes for not passing the ball. So he was aware he was supposed to make the pass, but he made a bad decision there. Then we cut to 2 minutes left in the game. Dylan takes 2 bad shots in a row, where he should have spent a little more time getting a better shot. After that miss, Malachi Flynn scores on a drive. Now it's a 5-point game. In 40 seconds, you know, they cut the lead in half. And luckily, on the next possession, Kyle Anderson comes through. Kyle Anderson, who's been great recently. A little aside on Kyle Anderson's increased scoring. I mean, we all know his scoring is just way up this season, shattering whatever he'd done previously in his career. He did not score very much against the Pistons. Before that, he had a four-game stretch where he'd scored at least 13 points, and that might seem very middling and unimpressive, but I'd been tracking this. Before this season, he'd never scored 13 or more points in 3 consecutive games. The most he'd ever done it was in back-to-back games. And now he's put together 3 separate instances this season of having 4 straight games where he scored 13. So I'd been really hoping he would get to that 5th consecutive game of scoring at least 13 points. But alas. But anyway, at the end of the Raptors game, Kyle Anderson, you know, he gets the ball and is open for a 3 with about 7 seconds on the shot clock. He pump fakes it, dribbles in, hits a floater, which is a couple seconds left on the shot clock, puts them back up 7. Maybe saves the game. I mean, it was a huge bucket, especially with them blowing these leads that they had in previous games. To have that shot go down was very, very important. And then Melton ices the game with his 5th and final 3-pointer on the next possession. So you still saw some of these errors that had cost them against the Magic, against the Knicks, against the Nuggets earlier, where they were loose with the ball and they were making bad decisions down the stretch. But this time, at least, they hang on. They get the win. They'd get one step closer to assuring their involvement in the play-in, and they stay right on the heels of the Golden State Warriors. Speaking of the games that the Grizzlies have been losing or blowing leads, I was looking at this. I thought it was very interesting. The Grizzlies have 11 losses this season when leading after the third quarter. That's tied for the most in the NBA. They have 11 losses when leading at halftime. That is tied for 2nd in the NBA. The Raptors actually have the most with 12 games that they've lost when leading at halftime. But what's interesting, you know, the Grizzlies have 11 losses when leading after 3. But the Grizzlies have been ahead after 3 quarters in 42 games. The Grizzlies are 31-11 when leading after 3 quarters. That being ahead after 3 quarters in 42 games, that's more games than the Nets, the Sixers, the Bucks, the Nuggets. The Sixers have only been ahead after 3 quarters 40 times, the Nets 36 times, the Bucks 42 times, so the same as the Grizzlies. All of these teams have unbelievable winning percentages when leading after 3. But it's interesting. I guess it kind of demonstrates that the Grizzlies are having, you know, a good amount of success. Obviously, you don't want to lose 11 times when you're ahead after the third quarter, but just to be ahead after the third quarter in 42 of their 67 games, that's good. I think that's objectively good. I can't think of any way that could be bad. So the Grizzlies have been getting ahead in these games. They also only have 3 wins when they're trailing after 3 quarters. So much like last year, they had trouble overcoming halftime deficits. This season, they aren't normally rallying from behind for victory. Maybe that's an issue with a young team, or maybe it's just random. But I found that interesting that they're ahead in a lot of their games. But anyway, they win against the Raptors. Jaren Jackson Jr. starts. And let's get into that after this quick break. Okay, against the Raptors, Jaren Jackson Jr. started his first game of the year. Taylor Jenkins said they'd been keeping him on the bench because of his minute limitations, and they thought that was the best way to utilize him. I don't know what that means. If his minutes are limited, just start him and play him fewer minutes. I guess maybe they wanted him to be available at the end of games. I feel like they could have balanced this. But anyway, we finally got here. Jaren Jackson Jr. started. We thought it made sense. The big question was, what are you going to do with Kyle Anderson, who's excelled all year at the four? What are you going to do with these other wings that you have normally been starting? Well, Grayson Allen's been injured, so I thought this was the opportunity in the Pistons game to go ahead and start Jaren Jackson Jr. and move Dylan to the two, move Kyle to the three. Because Grayson's out of the rotation with injury, then it wouldn't be awkward or difficult to make the switch. But they chose not to for that game, but they finally did for this Raptors game. I thought the starting lineup they chose, which is a starting lineup that's worked together before with Dylan at the two and then moving Kyle up to the three, made a lot of sense. It's some of your best players. I am in favor of playing all your best players together. One source of frustration is if you look at the whole season and you're like, we all saw this coming, that Jaren was going to play the four, and you're probably going to, you're either moving Kyle to the bench or you have Kyle to the three. Those are like the two options. And we figured, well, if you move Kyle to the three, maybe they would prepare themselves by having Kyle play at the three a lot in anticipation of Jaren Jackson Jr.'s imminent return. But no, they did not do this. This entire year of lineup experimentation and data collection, did they try playing Kyle Anderson at the three a lot? No. So Jaren had a pretty nice game. He was especially effective in the third quarter. He came out, scored, I think, 11 points in the third quarter. It was nice to see him hit a couple of three-pointers. His shots are still not going in, but I guess you want him to keep shooting and keep firing. But he does provide that spacing. And that's why I don't think it's a big deal having Kyle Anderson play at the three alongside him. If you have Dylan at the two, and if you have Jaren at the four, and then Kyle has been shooting three-pointers, so I think that works just fine. I really liked how they staggered Jonas and Jaren, how they played Jaren like the first 5-6 minutes, take him out, then Jonas is at the five, Kyle Anderson moves to the four because Desmond Bane comes in, and then you have that Ja, Dylan, Desmond Bane, with Kyle and Jonas. I love that. And then you have Jaren come back in to spell Valanciunas at the end of the first quarters, the end of the third quarters. I love that rotation decision. Because of that decision, you end up taking Tillman completely out of the rotation. He gets no minutes. And I think there's a way to do it. If you wanted to play Tillman and Clark off the bench while starting Valanciunas and Jaren Jackson Jr., they chose not to because Conchar's been involved these last couple games. And this, I think, is very, very strange. I'm a big Conchar fan. I think he's a good player. Controversially, earlier in the year, I was advocating I would rather play Conchar over Grayson Allen. But Conchar playing in this situation, I thought was very, very strange because you went from a situation where the team had decided to turn over the second unit to Justice Winslow. And they were force-feeding Justice Winslow minutes and force-feeding him the ball. And he was dribbling and running pick and roll. And like being in charge of the entire second unit's offense, it felt like. And then, after 6 games, they decide, you know, this isn't working great. We're going to get Tyus Jones back in there. But a lot of us have argued that Justice Winslow should just be a wing, a low-usage wing. That taps into his versatility. That allows him to be a great defender. That allows him to attack on offense without the pressure or the burden of having to set everything up. So to force feed Justice Winslow all these minutes to undo what felt like the chemistry of your entire second unit, which still has not recovered. We talked about there being many excuses or reasons why this team has not looked right recently and the second unit is still not playing very well together. I think it's fair to lay some of that at the decision to put Justice Winslow in that second unit and to remove Tyus Jones. But to go from that point where you said, okay, in games 60 through 65 of this regular season, we're going to all of a sudden turn this over to Justice Winslow to see what he's got and then right after that say, you know what? We're not going to play him at all. Now John Conchar's ahead of him in the rotation. Like, we could fit him in just fine at the three on these second units, but we're not going to. We saw all we needed to see. I mean, frankly, I think a lineup of Tyus Jones, DeAnthony Melton, Desmond Bane, Justice Winslow, and Brandon Clark was kind of awesome. It's kind of fun. I mean, I thought in the previous game, if it was going to be Jaren Jackson Jr. off the bench, to have Jaren and Brandon with Winslow, Melton, and Jones, that works well too. So the decision to go from we're going to force feed Justice Winslow all these minutes to him being out of the rotation behind John Conchar, I just find strange and surprising. I don't disagree with it. I'm just saying, based on them forcing him in the lineup earlier and giving him minutes and then being like, nope, now 0 minutes, Conchar's our guy, I find that very, very surprising. Like, do we think Winslow plays again this season? Does he play again as a Grizzly ever? I don't know. It really surprised me that he went from, we're going to try to find a way to get him on the court, to then when the opportunity presented itself to, hey, listen, you don't have to handle the ball. Tyus Jones, your old college teammate, he'll be the one. We'll just put you out there as a three or a four, and you just kind of just do your thing. Get up and down the court, make some plays. They said, no, thanks. We're not going to let him try to succeed in that situation. But anyways, Jaren Jackson Jr., he is back in the starting lineup. Got to assume he's going to finish the year in the starting lineup. The Grizzlies play 4 games in 5 days starting on Monday. Monday against the Pelicans, Tuesday against the Mavericks, and then Thursday and Friday against the Kings. Jaren Jackson Jr. is not on the injury report for the game against the Pelicans on Monday. He had been sitting out the first halves of back-to-backs. Will he play in all 4 of these games? I wouldn't think so, but maybe. Yeah, hopefully. I just hope they go with their guys and they say, hey, listen, we're going to play Ja and Dylan and Kyle and Jaren and Jonas Valanciunas. And then on the bench, we're going to get Melton, we're going to get Bane in the game. Bane had another very nice game against the Raptors. He was terrible against the Pistons. And maybe there is something to, he's bad when he starts. He's only good off the bench. Much like Brandon Clark last year and his like 3 starts, he was terrible, but when he came off the bench, he was always amazing. So Bane has really taken some steps if you, I guess, ignore the couple of really bad games. The other games have been really illuminating where his defense looks better, his offense, he's creating, he's passing, he's penetrating. He didn't really make his shots that well in the last game, but he was still scoring and being very effective. And he had that career high against the Timberwolves and the Knicks in consecutive games. So Bane's showing you a lot. You got to play him off the bench, especially with his shooting. And then when if Melton keeps erupting, and if we get the defense of Melton coming back and the energy, you have to play him. You've given Tyus Jones the backup point guard minutes, as you should. Those backup point guard minutes are decreasing. Against the Raptors, Ja Morant played the entire first and third quarters. So you got to think maybe this week, if he can handle it, I don't know if they're going to rest him up. I mean, there's nothing to rest for because you hope you make the play-in. If you don't make the play-in, I mean, the season's over. So is Ja Morant going to be playing 36, 38, 40 minutes in these games? He played a lot like that in the bubble when the games actually mattered. So you assume Tyus Jones is going to play, 8 minutes a game, 10 minutes a game. And that just leaves a couple of spots on the bench. Is Conchar going to play a handful of minutes? Or how about Brandon Clark? Do you shorten the rotation so your bench is just Tyus Jones, Melton, Bane, and Brandon Clark? I think maybe. Those are your 9 guys. Play those 9 guys. Let's do this. I didn't include Grayson Allen. I'm worried he's done for the year. I have no intel. I'm just basing that off of sore legs kept DeAnthony Melton out for 2 weeks. So if you actually have an abdominal strain, like an injury I've heard of that you have a name for, that is probably kind of serious in the scheme of Grizzlies injuries and how long a player would be out. Personally, I wouldn't play him over any of those 9 guys I mentioned. If you do, I guess maybe then I would be, I've been open to moving Kyle to the bench. If you want to start Ja, Grayson, Dylan, Jaren, and Jonas, to be clear, I do not. I don't think any of you guys were confused about that. But if you start Grayson, then you move Kyle to the bench, and then maybe you do play 10 deep. You play fewer Desmond minutes, fewer Melton minutes. If you wanted to argue, like I often do, that you can just replace all of Grayson Allen's minutes, here's an argument you could use. If you just look at the lineup data for the Grizzlies starting lineup, we've mentioned this a lot. The Grizzlies' common starting lineup before Jaren Jackson Jr., the Ja, Grayson, Dylan, Kyle, and Jonas, we've highlighted all year how they've had a very good net rating. They do. They're plus 9.2 per 100 possessions. So they have a plus 9.2 net rating in a total of, that's over 971 possessions. So that's a lot. If you sub in Desmond Bane, that exact same lineup for Desmond Bane, with Desmond Bane instead of Grayson Allen, it has a plus 9.0 net rating. So virtually the same. 0.2 of a difference. And that's in 426 possessions. If you sub in Melton in that same starting lineup, if it's Ja, Melton, Dylan, Kyle, Jonas, the five that finished the game against the Raptors, it's only been 96 possessions. Much, much smaller sample size. But that net rating is plus 20.5. So I think you can safely replace Grayson with just Desmond Bane minutes and D'Anthony Melton minutes. But this is it. I mean, this is the week. It's weird to feel like the end is here because, I mean, we finally made it. The last game of the regular season is this Sunday at the Warriors. We assume that'll probably be what decides the 8 and the 9. The Warriors are at home. The Warriors have 12 days at home that started a while ago before the play-in. So they get this really long homestand. The Warriors only have 4 games left. They play the Jazz, they play the Suns, and they play the Pelicans, and then the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies, like I said, have the Pelicans. Zion Williamson's out. I mean, Zion Williamson's out. Brandon Ingram's out. They're sort of tanking, but they're not yet eliminated. As I record this on a Sunday, they're playing the Hornets in a very close game. Could go either way. But if the Pelicans lose that and the Grizzlies win, the Grizzlies are in. Or if the Grizzlies beat the Pelicans on Monday, the Grizzlies are already in. But the Grizzlies just need to basically win one more game, and they're certainly in the play-in. But you don't want to be 9. You want to be 8. Having that extra opportunity where you only have to win one game is much better, obviously, than having to win 2 games. If you're in that 7-8 game, you only have to win one game. You can lose the first one and win the second one. You can win the first one, you're done. Then you're the 7 seed. But if you're that 9-10, you know, you play 4 and 5 in Memphis. You fly to Golden State to play the Warriors on Sunday, May 16th. Then if you're 9, you got to fly home, probably host the Spurs. Then you have to beat them, and then you got to fly out probably to the Warriors. Or if they beat, you know, if it's the Trailblazers or whoever's in the 7, or the Lakers. Excuse me, the Lakers. I keep forgetting. The Lakers are in the play-in almost certainly. They're effectively 2.5 games behind the Trailblazers because they lost that tiebreaker. So if the Grizzlies end up 9 or 10, if they win that first game, they're going to have to fly back to the West Coast to either play the Lakers or the Warriors, probably. It's not the best way to do it. I would rather, you know, play the Warriors on Sunday, stay out on the West Coast for that 7-8 game because you're going to be the 8 seed. You're not going to make the 7, more than likely. And then if you lose that, then you can fly home and you can face off against whoever it is. In this scenario, maybe the Warriors and Spurs would be playing and you play the winner of that to get in. Let's do that. That sounds better. And I'll close with this. Since the season is wrapping up, something to keep an eye on with 5 games left, Dylan Brooks is leading the NBA in personal fouls once again. He is up by about 20 fouls on number 2. So it looks like he is certainly going to lead the NBA in personal fouls for the 2nd consecutive season. And if Dylan Brooks does that, as far as I can tell, he will be the first wing player in NBA history to ever lead the NBA in personal fouls in consecutive seasons. Everyone else who's ever done it is basically a center. The shortest person I saw scrolling through the basketball reference archives, the shortest person I ever saw besides Dylan Brooks to lead the NBA in personal fouls in consecutive seasons is the great Vern Mikkelsen, also known as the Great Dane. That's right. A power forward for the Minneapolis Lakers in 1956 and 57. Oh, also in 55. led the NBA in personal fouls. So Dylan Brooks is chasing history this last week, so make sure you guys all keep track of that. Anyway, thanks for listening to this episode of Grits and Grinds. Please share it with other Grizzlies fans. You guys have a good one. Go Grizz!